Chapter 4 Mercy stepped out of her bedroom, fully dressed and ready for the day. It was early, but she was used to it. She straightened out the tunic of her chauffeur's uniform and picked an imaginary piece of lint off her sleeve. The statuesque woman should have expected it, but she was still surprised to find Lex was hard at work at the computer station nearest the sliding panel. On a nearby desk, a half-dozen computer monitors flashed and scrolled text, obviously waiting for more input, but he was ignoring them in favor of the circuit board he was sliding back into the computer cabinet. She frowned down at him from the vantage of the mezzanine before calling down, "Have you been up all night again?" Lex looked up, a screwdriver between his teeth and smudges of dust on his face. He mumbled something to her, then realized he wasn't making any sense, and spat the screwdriver out, before calling back. "Is it morning already?" "Dawn was an hour ago," she replied, walking down the stairs to join him. She gave him a scowl full of mock fierceness. "Did you get any sleep at all?" He replied airily, "Edison got by on catnaps. I had a few minutes of sleep here and there." "You're not Edison, Mr. Luthor." "Compared to me, Edison was a subliterate moron," he scoffed. "I've got some of the quirks of the panel sorted out. Given a location and elevation, I can home in on anywhere on the planet." "That's good. I thought you were busy peeking in on Miss Tyler, though." "It wasn't peeking. It was performing information gathering," he sniffed. "It paid off, incidentally. I'm having dinner with Rebecca again tonight."
"So soon? Isn't that unusual, sir?"
"Haven't you heard, Mercy? Lex Luthor's turning over a new leaf," he declared grandiosely, waving a circuit board about. She grinned cheekily at his back.
"This is why you're perfecting your peeping machine? To score extra dates?"
"No," he said flatly, treating her to a scowl. "If you'd be so good as to start another pot of coffee, I'll be happy to show you our next step."
She moved smoothly over to the kitchen counter, turning on the LexCorp coffee maker with practiced ease, before slipping Lex's old super genius mug under the drip. "So, what did you find?"
"That these men we're looking for are very, very good at hiding themselves. I've been making all sorts of inquiries all night with a great many, many government databases."
"Didn't they rescind your security clearance yet?"
"No, as long as that friendly little Korean fellow in the CIA's IT department keeps getting his monthly check, he will continue to forget to remove my access."
He walked to the counter, then took the now full mug. He winced just before taking a sip of the Blue Mountain goodness, and pulled open a drawer at the counter, pulling out a small bottle of red pills. Lex's own special blend of painkillers, vitamins, and caffeine. Between the lack of sleep, the kryptonite-laced wine from the night before, and the sweaty work he'd been engaged in, he was in that uncomfortable zone where one was still slightly drunk while suffering from sleep deprivation, but now also nursing a hangover. He popped a handful of pills, washing it down with strong, hot coffee. "Even with presidential-level access, even with my less-than-legally procured Excelsior access, gave me nothing. So I'm forced to follow up on the only clue I have on hand." "Something you heard from Miss Tyler?"
"Yes. Now that the panel can home in on GPS coordinates, and I have some coordinates to home in on, I think we can proceed,"
Lex said as he slid home the last circuit board. He stood up and flipped the switch back to on, letting the white cube take shape once more.
"What are you planning on doing?"
He walked over to the monitor and began typing at the keys.
"I want to look in on one of the men responsible for what they did to my brain. I have a phone number. With a phone number, I can find an address. With an address, I can pull up county records for floor plans and Google the coordinates. It turns out that dear Rebecca's Aunt Wendy is living with someone she calls Uncle Rex, who seems suspiciously like Rex Tyler."
"Why suspiciously?"
"Because he's a dead man, doubly so. He was missing, declared dead in 1986, just a little after the crisis. He reappeared in 92, looking younger than he did when he disappeared in 86, which was way too young for a man in his 60s to begin with.
Then, all of a sudden, he dies of acute organ failure in 1994, looking his correct age, which was when Rebecca inherited the company from him. He paused, raising an eyebrow at her. Last night, she was having a pretty chummy conversation with a man supposedly 10 years dead.
Well, you've been declared dead a few times yourself, Mr. Luthor.
Which is exactly why I'm suspicious. I wouldn't trust myself, so someone else with a history like mine makes me quite curious. He finished his coffee. I think I have the slide set up properly.
Then why bother with the slide? Why don't you just approach him directly, or send someone?
We may yet go that route, but for now, we need more information.
A few more key presses cleared the cube's display, sending it zooming down on a view of the eastern seaboard. Closer in, to upstate New York, to an affluent suburb, before finally closing in on a pleasant house with a picket fence and a neatly mown lawn. The view passed through a wall, then up through the ceiling, raising up from the floor of a second-story bedroom where an older couple was cuddled up in bed. They appeared to be in their late 50s. The woman had a short bob of lightly colored hair, and was dressed in a modest nightgown. The man was bare-chested, dressed only in pajama bottoms, and had graying dark hair. Lex would definitely need to work on getting color on the slideshow display, but his view was clear enough. The woman certainly looked like the driver's license photo he'd found for Wendy Tyler, wife to Rex Tyler. They both wore matching wedding bands, thin and lightly colored, probably platinum or white gold. Lex zoomed his view in closer to the bed. The sleeping man looked like Rex Tyler's driver's license photo, which, according to the DMV records he's been able to find, was taken back in 1978. Aside from the graying hair, the man looked almost exactly as he did in the nearly 30-year-old photo. This man, this Rex, was in incredible shape for a man of any age. He had an athlete's build, with not a spare ounce of fat. There was some of the inevitable softening that came with age, but the man's body was that of a man in his early 30s. Mercy raised an eyebrow.
I can only hope I look that good when I'm in my 80s, Lex said with a smirk.
There's no way he's in his 80s.
I'm tempted to see if he's had work done.
Well, why don't you?
If he's an imposter, that would be a quick way to check.
True, he replied,
tweaking the trackball and zooming in closer. The view peeled away skin and facial muscle, exposing the bone beneath. A slight twitch of the control proved a little too strong, sending the image past the bone, which Lex noted idly showed no signs of surgery, but quite a few healed fractures here and there. Lex managed to stop the display finally, but the massive image had centered on the man's brain. Specifically, his amygdala. Mercy stared up at the extremely enlarged view of the interior of the man's brain.
Is that... what are those rough spots?
Scars, Lex spat out. His grip on the trackball tightened, and he found his teeth bared in a snarl. His heart was hammering in his chest. It was almost exactly like him, almost exactly, right down to the detail that he hadn't quite considered before. One thing was clear, though. He forced his breath to slow and ground out to Mercy. This poor sap isn't a co-conspirator. He's another victim.
They exposed him, too?
Yes. The scars look old, at least as old as mine. But given how young he looks, it would be difficult to pin down a date for his exposure. Lex ran a hand over his scalp in his frustration. His eyes narrowed as he noted an odd reading on his display. He adjusted the cube slightly. Everything began to show up sharper, clearer, better outlined. Mercy raised an inquiring eyebrow at Lex's expression.
"Well, I think I can explain his discrepancies, and why he seems so young," he replied. "Chronoton radiation. He's saturated in the stuff, and his wife is contaminated. But it looks like secondary transfer. He's the primary source. Either he's jumped back and forth multiple times, or he spent a long time, decades maybe, outside of the natural flow of time."
He waved his hand dismissively. "But that's neither here nor there. Do you realize what this means?"
"No."
I've been looking at this whole thing as someone conspiring against me. I'd considered the possibility that a time traveler had gone back in time to alter my mind, specifically control my behavior in the present day. But that's not the only explanation.
He is a time traveler, Mr. Luthor, Mercy pointed out patiently.
Yes, but if I'd been affected at such a young age, then it's not inconceivable that it wasn't personal. If they did it to him as well, then there may be others. His life has enough parallels to mine that it could be a profile that our hidden conspirators are working through.
He dismissed the image on the cube and began hurriedly programming at the console.
I need to know.
Know what, sir?
How many others these people did this to? I need to run a search. But I need more computing power on hand to do it.
He mumbled to himself, turning his full focus back to the monitor.
Mercy shook her head.
She knew he would probably be preoccupied for the rest of the day. Taking his distraction for a dismissal, she made her way to the vehicle bay. They were going to need something to eat, after all, and the Big Belly Burger down the street would do just as well as pizza to keep Lex going. Rebecca Tyler never did get that second dinner with Lex. Mercy ended up calling her with some vague excuses as Lex managed to bury himself in his laboratory work. There were occasional forays into the outdoors, but never very far. Lex hadn't needed much in the way of parts for his project beyond some equipment he could pick up for himself at the local Radio Shack. It was a week later when he informed Mercy that he had completed his search engine. On the seventh day, Lex rested and let the cobbled-together equipment run. On that day, he unleashed a deluge of nuisance calls, the likes of which had never been seen before, and likely never be seen again. Men and women up and down the East Coast received the calls. There seemed to be neither rhyme nor reason to the pattern of the calls, only that no phone was safe. The call would ring 10 times. If no one picked up, or if the call was picked up by voicemail or some other sort of phone service, it would hang up immediately. Otherwise, a short advertising jingle for Wayne Tech would play. To say that the backlash against Wayne Tech was significant was to understate it. Lex was still not completely over LexCorp getting sold to them, and was quite happy to get his licks in where he could, even if it was the equivalent of juvenile pranking. A few engineered advertising budget tweaks would later indicate that Wayne Tech had paid for the mass phone spamming. The bad publicity, nuisance charges, and punitive fees they would face for violating the National Do Not Call database was simply a happy extra as far as he was concerned. The real point of the exercise was considerably more invasive. He'd started with a purloined customer database for phone carriers up and down the East Coast. He would have preferred to have one of the entire country, but he'd been too busy working on the other details to get the rest of the list. The other details in this case included setting up the database and the GPS system to the sliding panel's targeting computer, as well as setting up a camera feed with pattern recognition software of his own design, programming the automated calling software, and hijacking a telemarketing firm's autodialer equipment was almost an afterthought. The autodialer pulled a name from the database and executed the call. While the call attempted to connect, a search would run concurrently, tracing the location of the call's destination. In the case of landlines, it was simple enough to trace the location from a billing address. Otherwise, a complicated algorithm inserted into the cellular network allowed him to trace calls to individual cell phones, with an accuracy of a few yards. Once the call was picked up, the sliding panel would center on the location so retrieved. The pattern recognition software would get into the act at that point. It would center itself first on the individual answering the call, cross-checking the face of the one answering the call against DMV photos and mugshots to confirm identity, before zooming in closer to take a snapshot of the brain. The pattern recognition software would check once more, looking for the distinct pattern of scars that phobaline tetrahydrochlorate left behind. In the event of a positive match, it would flag the database entry before running the whole against a statistical analysis linked to Luthor's various government databases, to find significant patterns in those displaying the marks. With even the various tweaks and optimizations Lex had performed to the slide,
it still needed 3 seconds to complete each individual scan. Running the search consecutively on the tens of millions of phone subscribers on the East Coast would have taken well over a year to complete. Seeking to cut down on that, Lex reprogrammed the panel to scan 1,000 phones at a time. The autodialers could keep up, if only just barely. Lex had had to take over the capacity of a large Indian firm, as well as 6 Philippine customer service companies, just to get everything to work all at once. The expanded search cut the time down considerably, from a year to less than a day. It was also more of a strain on Lex's equipment. He only hoped the slide could keep up. As the search ran, Lex lounged in his large, overstuffed sofa. He had a cold beer in hand, his eyes were closed, and his head leaned back, letting his mind drift. The privacy implications his slide panel introduced were terrifying. While similar setups could be done with traditional teleportation equipment, the power requirements were prohibitive. There was no way to make sure a broad search would be energy efficient. With the panel, however, he could do these things with easily affordable equipment on low power consumption. Most importantly, nothing could keep it out or keep it from peeking in on you. He was running a search, real-time human engine, on people. If he wished, he could just as easily have changed the parameters to find him every single redhead in lingerie within a 50-mile radius. Or every criminal with an outstanding warrant currently in violation of his or her parole. Or every husband cheating on his wife within a single block. Lex mused that it was good fortune that he'd been the one to develop it. After all, he would be able to use it responsibly. The laugh that escaped his lips was genuinely amused. Mercy eyed him from her desk. She'd just gotten off the phone with Miss Techmacher, the woman that handled the day-to-day running of Lex's remaining legal business interests. Eve Techmacher's mother had needed a complex and expensive medical procedure that Lex had paid for, and in so doing, had bought the woman's undying loyalty. The woman was once the head of LexCorp's secretarial pool, but she turned out to be so spectacularly loyal to Lex personally that she'd quit LexCorp during the buyout, and had ended up becoming Lex's personal assistant, albeit at a remove. Lately, his attention had not been on his money, and it was only Mercy and Miss Techmacher's industrious work that kept Lex in beer and electronics.
Eve says everything's going well.
Also, those bioengineered rice shares that we picked up in Taiwan are finally starting to turn a profit. She just thought you might want to know.
Her judgment, as always, is impeccable.
Are you almost done with this?
This what?
Your vendetta. You haven't really done much but putter around since you used your peeping device on Miss Tyler's uncle.
I'm still working on it. As I told you before, there's far too much we don't know. I'm trying to remedy that.
Lex was about to say more when a chime from his equipment signaled the completion of the panel search. He got up smoothly and made his way across the lab. As he got to the monitors, he watched the scrolling data for a long moment. His expression became more and more grave the longer he stared.
What's wrong?
This is monstrous. His voice was filled with raw, painful anger. She knew he'd been angry when he'd found out about how his brain had been tampered with. That had been nothing. That was a campfire. Now he was a blazing conflagration. That hard, cold light in his eyes had been lit. The rage he'd once reserved for Superman was now turning on these people, whoever they might have been. His voice had dropped, tightly controlled now, but aching to unleash hell on someone. The mad, terrible expression of a man seeking to tear down heaven itself.
What is it?
He pointed to the screen, specifically at the list of names that completely filled the screen. On the top, written in bold text, it said, 28,452 entries flagged.
Even with false positives, that's a terrifyingly large number.
He scrolled lower, looking over every point of correlation between the names as they came up. The pattern was there, clear and unmistakable. Men, women, teens, children, the elderly,
Victims of every demographic. This is huge. This goes beyond...
He paused, a clear picture forming from the sample. Finally, large enough for him to see true patterns.
Genius. Crippling genius.
Mercy slid into nod and grunt mode. Lex needed to vent, and she knew that accommodating him was part of her job.
A statistically significant portion of our sample have standard IQs in the genius end of the scale. But I don't think that's the only indicator. It's not just superior intelligence, it's... I'm not sure how to describe it. I didn't realize it at the time, but some of those tests measure things that can also be used to check for indicators of mental flexibility.
He shook his head, looking for words that fit better. But his anger had robbed him of his eloquence.
The new things. That's the factor these people all share. On standard psychological tests, in their permanent records, all of them showed unusually high levels of adaptive thinking. Tendency towards innovation, at least before their exposure. The other correlation is truly disturbing.
That is?
Mental problems. Over 70% of these people have a record of some sort of mental disease, or other antisocial behaviors bad enough to need diagnosis. Did you know that there are all sorts of studies relating schizophrenia to creativity and intelligence? If I'm reading this data right, the reason why they are schizophrenics is because they're so bright. They were made schizophrenic.
With the fear toxin.
Scare anyone badly enough and you can break their mind. These animals have been doing this for generations now, systematically crippling us in our thousands.
The anger in Lex's voice was getting to her. Mercy was finding it more and more difficult to keep her own composure in the face of it. Lex wasn't beyond mad. She could tell this whole thing offended him on a profoundly personal level. But why? She asked. He looked away, the anger slowly starting to drain from his expression. There was a shift as the question echoed in his mind.
Why?
Why would someone, anyone, go through the trouble? Who benefits? Who would do such a thing? Where was the profit? The whole enterprise was far too widespread and organized to be some random psychotic inflicting damage on people. There was a reason for this, perhaps one that a sane man could not accept. But, and here Lex allowed a cold smile to touch his lips, his discovery had left him with serious doubts about his own sanity. Lex did not know his own mind as well as he'd hoped. There were places in there that he was not only unfamiliar with, but there were places in his head that he was outright terrified of. Places that thought taking kryptonite-laced super steroids was a good idea. Places that insisted that a Kryptonian needed to die. Places that made him budget billions of dollars a year towards killing a man whose only fault was in being better than Lex. He'd covered those parts over, piled on justifications and rationalizations so thickly that he'd almost believed them. But the past few months, with the violent detox and the discovery of how his mind had been tampered with, had forced him to reevaluate everything. The knowledge that he was not alone hit harder. The anger had gone past, white-hot, pushed to the extreme of cold, brutal logic that was no less horrific for the fury that fueled it. Detached from his emotions, he analyzed the data once more. The analysis was clear. Separated from the human element, the why leapt out at him. Lex turned to face Mercy. He stepped closer. The cold that he'd dripped himself in cracked, and he did something he never thought he would. He reached out a hand, staggering slightly as the blood drained from his face. It was so clear. Mercy reached out to catch him before he fell. His arms encircled her without warning, and he clung to her, seeking some warmth, desperately, as the implications filtered through his mind. A faint blush threatened to rise in her cheeks, but she beat that down mercilessly. She cleared her throat, looking down at his bald head as he held her tightly.
He looked up, staring into her eyes. For a moment, it was his detox all over again. The eyes of a broken man, one battered to his limits and reduced to animal's panic and irrationality. He was at his lowest ebb once more. The cusp just before he struggled to pull himself back together. He whispered to her, his fists bunching up the material of her uniform.
They want to cripple us. And limited. They want the human race stupid and obedient. They're trying to keep us ground down to our lowest common denominator. Take away mankind's inventors, its leaders, its innovators, before they even have a chance to come forward. It makes sense. How do you keep someone from causing you trouble? Get to him. Deal with him before he gets a chance to. They couldn't kill all of these people. That would make it too obvious a pattern. But make them unstable? Make them antisocial, asocial, arrogant, and completely unable to cooperate with others through insanity? And they'll isolate themselves for you. More efficient. It takes less manpower since your prisoner guards himself. The few who slip through the cracks, either because they were strong enough to resist or were missed in the sweeps, aren't enough to stem the tide. Not enough of us to make a difference that they can't control.
Lex's eyes were shining.
They turned me into a selfish, self-centered, amoral monster, so that I wouldn't make trouble for them, because I'd be easier to deal with.
So that I'd keep everything I'd created for myself instead of using it to change the world.
Are you all right?
He straightened up slowly, still holding on to Mercy for support, but no longer weak, no longer needing her. Now he held her, just for the warmth of the human contact.
No, I don't think I'm going to be all right until I see every one of these animals bleeding and kneeling at my feet. We still don't have the who, but with this why, I've just figured out a how.
How what?
How to fight back. Call Miss Techmacher Mercy, my dear.
His eyes were hard once more.
We're going to war.